I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, my guest is Romans, aka Sam Roman. Sam joins us from his home in LA. When we start talking about the artists that Sam has written with and produced, it's an absolute who's who. And trust me, when we get into the chat, I mean, there's a story that he tells us about, you know, arguably with possibly the biggest artist in the world, and just a moment with that person that he goes into. It's the stuff of dreams. It really is. And it's a great chat. And yeah, you're in for a treat. Before we get on with that, a few thank yous. Thanks to Scroobius Pip, everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Biggest thanks of all go to you lot. Thanks ever so much for supporting the podcast. You know, we're into 2022 now, and you know, this is what, the third year, I think, of Off the Beaten Track now, and it's been an absolute ball. You know, every week I get to sit down with people, you know, absolutely fascinating, creative people like today's guest, Sam, and just have these wonderful conversations. And it's just a bonus that I get to put them out, and you lot get to enjoy them as well. And, you know, you've been so kind in supporting and sharing and messaging, you know, what your thoughts are on the pod. So, yeah, so big love and thanks to you lot. If you want to support the podcast, the easiest way to do that is give us a like, love, a share, a retweet on all the socials. We're on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, and if you really want to support us, then subscribe on your listening platform, and then you won't miss any episodes. I try and put a few out each week. And then if you really, really, really want to support us, I have a Patreon, which it costs you 79p a month. And for that 79p, you'll get a back catalogue of another 200 or so episodes, radio shows, all the video episodes. You can watch all the episodes over on Patreon. And yeah, that 79p goes in the pot to help cover the cost of the podcast. So yeah, you can find out about all of this and everything else you need to know about the podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, I know why you're here. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Romans. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do, it's just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Sam, how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm good. How's life? Where are you? In LA at the moment?
I'm in LA, yeah. I've lived here for about 3 years now. So this is the new home.
I mean, I've never been, but I just hear it's quite a crazy place. Is that an exaggerated view on it, or are you generally just locked away in the studio?
I mean, a little bit of both, but I spend most of my days at my studio at my house. But yeah, it's a mental place. It's like absolutely insane. It's really rare to meet someone who actually grew up here. Everyone's here for a reason, and it's the biggest rat race of all time.
So was you there throughout the sort of lockdown?
Yeah, I was locked down here. We didn't get back. I'm here with my wife and during the lockdown, it was our two girls, but we just had a baby as well. But we were locked here for 18 months and couldn't get back to England. So it was a nightmare scenario, but made the best of it. And not the worst place to be locked up in the sunshine, but...
Did you find it like a good, I mean, obviously you said a baby as well, so I imagine you had your hands full, but the time that you did have, you know, that you could be creative, did you find that a fruitful time to kind of, you know, get stuck in the studio and have maybe less distraction than you'd normally have in a standard working week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my main focus around the same time as the lockdown was starting has been my label that I run with my manager Mark, and we are our main artist is a girl called Elena Castillo, and we had to hand this album in and finish loads of work. So to be honest with you, it was like the perfect scenario. It was cleared the diary and just stayed in the studio and got everything done with her. But then I also found that I was, you know, Zoom writing became a thing and people were shitting on it from an early, from the beginning of the pandemic and saying it didn't work. And I sort of was like, well, if you work with someone who can write a song on a guitar or a piano, actually it's pretty similar to being in the room. It doesn't really make a difference. And what I found was that you could write a song in 2 hours that would take 9 hours in the room. And so it was, it's incredible because you miss that whole physical getting to know you stage, the like, should we go out and get lunch? Let's talk about how shit the industry is, all the usual things that happen before a session. And you sort of just get down to it and everyone wants to immediately get off the laptop. So you write as quickly as possible. And actually creatively, that's a really good process that sort of takes away a lot of the burdens that
trims off all the fat.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really fruitful.
Well, let's start the playlist. And for track one, Sam, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please, mate.
So I remember trying to come up with these, and that was a particularly difficult one.
This is the one that everyone says is the hard one.
It's impossible because I could name you like 1,000 songs with brilliant.
you can chuck a couple of honourable mentions in if you want, mate.
I chose the song by Brandy because it's not really my favourite intro, but it's such an interesting technique. What they did is not even the intro; it's at the end of track two, which is Full Moon, the title track on that album. Rodney Jerkins or Dark Child, who was the producer. Basically the end of that song is him phoning her, so you hear a very muffled like phone voice, and it's Rodney calling Brandy up and saying, I've just come up with this song in the studio, this idea. And he starts playing the beat and suddenly you drop into the beginning of the actual song, which is the sort of, you know, the full high definition version of it.
Yeah,
but that technique of playing someone something in a really small form is such an amazing thing. I try and do it with writing. I try and sort of like tease a melody or tease the phrasing of a word that's going to, a line that's going to come in the chorus. Because once you do that and someone sort of knows something, when they then hear it loud, it's like they've heard it 1,000 times before. So I chose that one because that just sprung to mind.
I've stumbled over this question for about 350 episodes now, Sam, and I'm going to try and frame it as best as I can. But I'm always interested, certainly with people that write and produce, talking about the way that people listen to music now and how that can influence and change the way that a song is written. And I just wonder, you know, when I watch my children with the way they listen to music on their phones, them thumbs are rapid, man. And the attention spans, you know, appear to be getting a little bit shorter. And I just wonder how much of that seeps into, you know, I've had people on here that look at songwriting as a complete science and they're like, no, here's a formula, this works. And then I've had people that say, no, my intro is going to be 4 minutes of, like, you know, guitar wank before I even get there. You know, there's so many different genres. But within kind of, you know, more kind of mainstream, you know, commercial music, and writing, you know, trying to write hits and stuff and for other people, like, so you can see why I've never framed this question right, because I just go off on a tangent. But where I'm going with it is, like, the way that people listen to music now and the fact that it appears to be like, right, just get all the fat off of this, let's just get it to this. How much of that finds its way into your creative process when you're writing?
Like, it happens the whole time, and it's the... I don't really mind it. I read an article the other day where this musician was talking about exactly that. And I think that there are, I think that anything that forces you to do something creative is a really good tool. Sorry, that loads of background noise. The format of songs now are almost going back to like the kind of Beatles arrangements. You're starting with choruses, or you're having these like really impactful sections right at the beginning. And in terms of like, look, is it making us write better music? Probably not. But is it forcing us to do things that we wouldn't have done if we had the ability to indulge a long intro or a really rambling verse section? That's another question. I like anything that makes you do something you wouldn't have done. I just think it's really a good... There are like those... have you ever heard of oblique strategies, the cards that sometimes people have in studios that they'll say... They're these really cool playing cards. I think Brian Eno invented them. And you'll pick one and it will say, start by writing the middle eight. Or it will say like, write a song without the word the, or like, you know, just weird things. But creatively, that really helps. And I feel the same way about, you know, writing for DSPs and writing to being conscious of skip rate when writing, especially when it comes to pop songs.
It's so weird. You're bang on the money, like with what you said about it has almost gone back to, you know, that kind of 60s approach. Like all the Motown songs, it's just like bang. There's no fat on them, is there? They're just like 2.5 minutes of hooks and just, you know, such infectious choruses. And, you know, talking of intros and straight to, I mean, you look at something like Help by the Beatles. It's like bang. Could you get any more in than the beginning of that song? It is, and it's short and to the point. Yeah. Okay. Well, for track two, Sam, I'm going to take you back and I'm going to ask you please to tell me the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Wait a second, because I haven't got these answers in front of me.
Okay, I can prompt you. I've got them in front of me.
Let me. What did I say?
Let's have a look. Let's pull this up.
Again, because it's like saying what's your favourite film. It's like impossible.
I am aware that all of these answers could change in any given day or any given hour. And it's weird that we spoke about the Beatles because that's what you chose. You chose Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah. I mean, and again, especially with the Beatles, because the Beatles are my absolute number one. And I'm going through a whole emotional roller coaster watching the Get Back documentary at the moment.
Oh, man, it's just beautiful, isn't it?
Just honestly incredible. And especially as a writer watching it and just watching the evolution of these demos becoming like songs I've grown up listening to. Yeah. It's just incredible. But yeah, Eleanor Rigby again, it's probably not even one of my like absolute top five Beatles songs, but I just remember it's the first time I listened to a song and really listen to lyrics. And I think I was probably six or something. You know, I was weaned on the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I just remember this, at the imagery in my head of like Father McKenzie darning his socks and just, it's a, you know, it's a sad song. It's a song about like, about all the lonely people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first time I ever listened to something and realized that songs weren't just these like earworm things that you sing in the car. They're like, they're poetry. So yeah, that's the one that definitely had an emotional impact on me.
Was there always records on at home growing up?
Yeah, very much so. My mum was a huge music lover and followed around, you know, Bowie and Cat Stevens and Marvin Gaye and people like that on tour. So she really got me hooked from, I think, like 4 years old. One of my earliest memories was at school and I was like performing Hard Day's Night to like the whole class. And, you know, she got me into like Stevie Wonder and Marvin and Donny Hathaway at like a ridiculously young age. And I think that's a big part of my melody development, definitely.
Yeah. Where was home? Where was growing up?
I grew up in Pinner, which is near sort of in between like Harrow and Watford, and is famous for being the childhood home of Elton John.
Okay. How was it as a place, as a childhood home for you? Was it a happy place growing up there?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I'm the baby of the family. I had 14 and 16-year-old brothers and my cousin who lived with me, who was 6 years younger, 6 years older, sorry. So I was always the baby of the family and was very much, I think, you know, that's a big part of why my parents nurtured the musical side and allowed me to go into it from, you know, I left school at 16, which in retrospect is probably not the most sensible idea for most people, but you know, they pushed me to follow my dream. And I think that often has a lot to do with being the youngest.
Well, let's talk about that, because for track three, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that reminds.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You have your time at school. And are you familiar with what you put for this one?
Yeah, so I put Oasis, Some Might Say. I remember like school being, in terms of my musical development, it was like going on the weekend. And I really miss this. Like, it's the same with shops and buying CDs. Like, I feel sorry that kids can't like save up their pocket money and go and buy one CD.
There's the journey. It's the journey, isn't it?
Oh, mate, 100%. And it's like having and buying something tangible that you can hold. Like, it's such a big part that's missing, I think, now. But I used to go to the music shop, to like the musical instrument shop, and I used to buy like a songbook so I could go and play it. And most of my, I was terrible academically, only like, just because I was fucking lazy and hated school. But
that'd do it.
Yeah, exactly. So like, a lot of my time was spent like pretending I had a music lesson, and then I'd just go and sit on my own somewhere and like play, learn loads of songs. So that like musical memory from school was going and getting those. And I used to get like a Bon Jovi like songbook or like Blur or Oasis or stuff like that. And some might say, and like She's Electric, I just, for some reason, I always picture myself in like the spare maths room where like there wasn't a lesson on Wednesdays, I remember. So that was always my plan. I'd like get to there and there were no other lessons going on around in the surrounding room. So I could like probably go there and like play a few Oasis songs on my own. So that's the, yeah, that song is the one that always reminds me of school.
So was that on guitar you was playing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The acoustic.
I think some might say it's their best pop song.
I agree. I think that people, it's the same with most bands. People, you think of Oasis, you think Don't Look Back in Anger, Wonderwall, Champagne Supernova, and people never met, like, also She's Electric, or like Cigarettes and Alcohol, like, yeah, amazing, yeah, pop songs, exactly, yeah, what you said, just like catchy melodies, really great titles. They're such a brilliant band.
Because you've got the, I'm just being a bit nerdy now, but you've got the, obviously, some I'd say bit, which is so good.
Yeah,
and then you've got that, because I'll be standing out there. You've got that second kind of, it goes again, and it's like, oh, you get like bang for your buck for this one. And
yeah,
and I think he does it again. I mean, I think Noel at that point, on that, you know, they say that, you know, certain songwriters have their moment where they're just, you know, it's just pouring out of them. The fact that he was using things like Acquiesce and Masterplan as B-sides makes you realise just how confident he was with his abilities at that point. And I think Masterplan's another one that's got that chorus, then it goes again. It's just, it sort of doubles up. And it's, yeah, he was, I think he was pretty untouchable at that point, Noel.
Absolutely. And you can hear, like, that's, it sort of goes back to the question before about the sort of the DSPs and skip rate affecting the way that you write. But you know, those Oasis songs, in terms of arrangement, again, like so similar to the Beatles, which were obviously his biggest influence. But it's like, that's like a form of arrangement that you don't get in songs anymore. It's really like a one chorus section and then a refrain. Mm. And that's also what I love about a lot of their songs. I mean, they do have a lot of pre-choruses too, but they have that like very classic arrangement in a lot of their songs.
Yeah. So, I presume, I always ask guests what they wanted to be when they was at school. I imagine music was very much on the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the only thing, really. I sort of, I always say I am talented and I work hard, but I'm here because I got lucky as fuck. I mean, I really got lucky. And I then, you know, worked my ass off to stay in a position where I can write songs for people. But I don't know what I would have done, because music was the only thing. And it was, I didn't, you know, I dabbled as an artist and I was signed to Jay-Z's Roc Nation and made albums, but I think it was always just writing songs. It was never performing. But I knew from 4 years old, like literally, that is what I wanted to do. I wanted to write songs, and I had no idea how that was going to happen.
Were you always confident in your abilities?
Yeah, in an ignorant and arrogant way, absolutely, which I think is, like, again, important, because it's such a, it's like people say you have to have a thick skin, but it's not even that. It's like you have to be absolutely relentless and have no backup plan in a stupid way. Like, I really look back and am concerned that, like, things could have gone south very quickly. Yeah. But thank God they didn't. But, yeah, no backup plan whatsoever. It was going to be music or nothing.
So leaving school at 16, where was the first port of call career wise?
I'd say the thing that allowed my parents, I think, to let me leave was that we had a family friend who was a manager, had an artist signed to Warner called Keisha White. And he sort of took me up on a kind of development deal. And I, at that stage, I was doing a lot. I was going to Sweden at 16 and working with these like cool producers who were doing a lot of sort of, you know, American pop at the time. So, you know, I wasn't leaving to nothing. I was kind of leaving to this almost like apprenticeship deal situation that obviously quickly fizzled out and fell to shit. But, you know, that I think that gave my parents the confidence to let me go and try it out. And then it was pretty obvious that I wasn't going to go and do A-levels or anything.
Yeah. I'll take it you've always been super driven.
You know what? Like, I've always been lazy, but I'm aware of the lazy. Like, it's really bad. And I spent 10 years, like between 16 and 26, I wasn't doing a hell of a lot. I was definitely doing my 10,000 hours, or maybe 20,000 in my case, and just making music the whole time. But, you know, was never driven to push myself or to make any of the music go anywhere. And it was really when I met my manager, Mark, who is like the antithesis of me. He's the really like driven and strategic one. And it was the combination of both of us that then things really started happening.
Okay. Well, I've got sort of one more in the formative years. And for track four, I'm going to ask you, Sam, to tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please.
So this was Ready or Not by the Fugees. I also bought the score, the whole album, the same day. I think it was in the Woolworths in Pinner. I probably got some Pick and Mix as well.
Shout out Woolworths Pick and Mix.
Absolutely.
It was an island within a shop, wasn't it? Of just sweets.
Just sweets. Probably most of them were stale. Definitely nicked a few before putting them in the bag.
I got a mad little story about Woolworths Pick and Mix, which I don't ever really get a chance to mention it, but you've said it, so I'm going to say it, right? I used to kind of travel around the country with one of the lads that was in the In-Betweeners, like, as he would DJ, and I would go around the clubs with him. And at this point, Woolworths had just gone under and had just switched to online. And at the time, I think In-Betweeners was like the biggest show on like, you know, on the TV for young audiences. And they reached out to him and said, look, will you do like the voiceover for the new Woolworths ad? And I don't know what they paid him, but part of the deal was unlimited Pick a Mix delivered to his door whenever.
Amazing.
I know.
Unbelievable.
I was like, sign up for that, mate. That's incredible. That's,
and there's a strange crossover in our two stories, because a lot of the In-Betweeners was filmed in Pinner, and a lot of it was filmed in the pub behind that Woolworths where I bought those CDs. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Full circle again. I also have a podcast with the guy that played Neil in the In-Betweeners. We have a podcast where we talk about our love of mixed martial arts. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Weird. That's brilliant. I love the In-Betweeners.
You was talking about, we just went off on a tangent about Pick a Mix, but you mentioned Ready or Not by the Fugees.
Yeah, and the score. And I think I probably remember all of them. But I remember going in and buying like a load of CDs, and I bought Space. Do you remember that band?
Neighbourhood, the album?
Yeah, with the spiders on the front.
Oh, no, it was called Spiders, that album, was it? Neighbourhood was the single, yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And I bought one more. I think it was like Manic Street Preachers or something. But yeah, I remember the Fuji score is like still in my top 10. It's such an amazing album.
Yeah,
I remember that on the CDs. Shame they're gone now.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that you've just reminisced and you could remember where you bought them and what you bought on that day, them kind of journeys. And I don't know if you was like me, but I'd then get home and, you know, as I listened to it, I would just devour the album artwork and just read every single note on there.
Exactly. You'd read the lyrics whilst you listened to the songs and you'd read the thank yous. And like, I used to read like who wrote them and who played guitar on them and stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's no more.
So as you got, you know, older and I guess probably, you know, had a few more quid in your pocket, would record shopping and you know, record stores become like important places for you?
Well, it did in another sense, because around the time that I left school, I was also like, garage was like the big thing. And all my mates were listening to it. And I sort of, because of making music, I stumbled into like an embarrassing garage crew and was, might have been an MC. I can't really remember the details, but I used to go.
You're being well sketchy about that.
That's really not my proudest part of my music. But I used to go and play in clubs, and I had decks, and me and my mate would go to Watford to like a proper record store, and we'd buy like, that became the thing that I'd save up for. And I'd buy like garage and drum and bass vinyls, and like properly, you know, trove through these boxes of secondhand stuff. And that was like an incredible memory, because it was a bit like going to Woolworths, but in a like audiophile way, and like really just having to research and find someone out, you know, someone in Essex who had a copy of like a Ronnie Size vinyl I could go and pay like 80 quid for or something.
You'd always would have like there was the two different, you had the human, a human traffic kind of dude, didn't you, that would literally like bend you over for like 60 quid for some record. And you'd always have the kind of the Jack Black from High Fidelity kind of elitist guy as well, that would sort of sneer at your purchases. Them guys are now independent record shops that sort of, you know, they're few and far between. I want to know what world these people operate in now and what they do for themselves.
I know. I was really sad to see Black Market Records go. It used to be on the album.
Yeah, man.
I also used to put on drum and bass raves. And I used to book Nicky Black Market all the time. And it was when I went back recently, it probably closed down 10 years ago or something, but I noticed when I went back there recently to Soho, I was like, oh my God, where's it gone? And that was such an important part of drum and bass culture, that shop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that leads us on nicely to track 5, Sam. And I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please.
This is really weird. This is all very symbiotic, I think is the word. It's like, so this song is Pulse X by Youngster, and Youngster used to work in the garage section of Black Market Records. So there you go.
Wow. Is this Youngster that was at Rinse?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rinse FM.
Yeah.
And it was Youngster, but it was also, I think his crew was called Musical Mob from Park Royal. And that record was the first, because my sort of years clubbing were at that stage like going to under 18s raves and like DJing and MCing and then putting on my own raves. And that track was the first song that I remixed on Fruity Loops. And I went, at the time, there was a place called Music House in Tottenham Hale where you could go and press a dub plate. So I went with my mate, like two terrified boys, to the middle of Tottenham Hale, and it was like Tottenham Hale was real in that era.
Yeah.
And we went to the back of this estate, to this little studio, and as we walked in, the whole of Pay-As-You-Go Cartel were there, who were like our heroes at the time. And like Dizzy Rascal was there, and Wiley and Major Ace, and like everyone. And we pressed that dub play, and they all came into the room to listen to my remix, and then walked out pretty quickly because I think it was shit. But, but every time I hear that, it reminds me of like Destiny in Watford, which was the club we used to play at, or Area, the other one.
You talk about walking in the room and seeing, you know, people that you had admiration for, and you know, you was in there theoretically doing the same as what they were doing, you know, creating stuff and you know, I'm making music. How do you deal with, and or do you have to deal with imposter syndrome in what you do?
Oh God, it's like, honestly, it's a real thing I think of the whole time. And it's not, I think someone said to me the other day, it was like a really clever line about like people being confident in parties. It was like, whenever you go to a party and you feel unconfident, realize that 90% of the people around you also feel really unconfident. Yeah. And it's something that, especially in my industry where I find myself working with really young people the whole time. I'm 35, so I'm not old, but I'm not young. But I'm working with 18 to 20 year olds sometimes. And like, there's a lot of that confidence issue comes into the light hole. Well, do they think I'm really old? Do they think everything I'm suggesting is like a granddad's idea? And like, that's my form of imposter syndrome, but being aware of it and being aware that no one really actually thinks that, and they probably have their whole own set of insecurities. That sort of makes me see it for what it is. It's just another form of insecurity. And my mate Steve Robson is this amazing songwriter and producer, and I remember being in once years and years ago with this guy, I can't remember his name. He won X Factor at the time, and I don't think he did much sadly afterwards, but we did off his first session after winning the show. Sorry, annoying dog outside. And I remember him, like, visibly, he was shitting himself as he walked in. We weren't, like, even, I certainly wasn't a big name. And Steve was like, don't worry, mate, we're all bluffing. Like, I thought that was such a good line. It's so true. We all, however good you think you are or put yourself across as, everyone is bluffing. Everyone really thinks they're shit.
I can give you the ultimate reality check, right? So what happened, I run a club in Essex and have done for 30 years. And
which one? I've probably been there.
It's called the Pink Toothbrush.
And it's
the longest running sort of alternative club in the UK. It's like, it's got some history to it. It used to be called Crocs before then. And it often sort of pops up in the new romantic kind of documentaries because Depeche Mode were a resident band and stuff like that. So yeah, it's got kind of lots of kind of history and stuff like that attached to it. But so I've worked there forever, and I was occasionally still DJ, and I was DJing just before lockdown. I was telling someone else on the podcast this a little while ago. And this kind of young girl came to the DJ booth and was just like, are you Stu Whiffin? And I was like, yeah. And I thought, wow, still got it. Like, still got it. And she went, oh, you went to school with my mum. She said to say hello. Now you just think, there you go. There's your reality check right there, son.
That's amazing. Like,
yeah, tell her I said hello. I was like, oh, fucking hell.
I love that.
Okay, well, look, let's take you home. Track 6, a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please, Sam.
So this, I could have, now I think of it, I think I read it as home country, but
that's
my home
okay. Country, you'll be the 330th of the 350 people that I've interviewed that have done that. So,
That I know it's county, I'll give you two. So okay. My home country, I said, Jealous by Labyrinth, and he's a really good mate of mine. He came over for a swim a couple of weeks ago, and I told him then that this, I think, it might actually be one of my, like, truly one of my favorite songs of all time. up there with like God Only Knows, and like it's, I think it's the best pop song of our age, and it's so interesting because it was not successful and it didn't chart. And if you go on Spotify now, I don't know the exact number, but it's probably got about 600 million streams. And it's just one of the most like referenced songs in every writing session. It is a work of pure genius. And I tell him that the whole time. I literally think it's one of the best songs ever.
Yeah.
But Home County would obviously be Elton, because we literally, he grew up about three streets away from where I grew up. Okay. So what is my favorite Elton song? Haven't even thought about that, so it's going to take a while. I don't know my favorite one. I listened to, I was listening to Honky Chateau the other day.
Oh, has that got Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters on it?
Exactly the one I was going to say. Yeah.
Fuck me, Sam. I was literally having that on my earphones when I had a run this morning. What really? A fucking record that is.
Hey, incredible. Absolutely. From Bernie and Elton, like just a masterpiece. And it's weird because it sits on an album with like Honky Cat and what else is on there? Is Benny and the Jets on that album? Might be. Might not be. Maybe I'm really. But incredible, incredible song. And not one of his most referenced songs. Really. I think, so I worked with him, which was one of the great moments of my life. We spent like a week together in the studio. And at the time, there was this tribute album going on, and I think Maren Morris did a version of that song. I might be getting this completely wrong, but I remember saying to him, I was like, that song, because I was having a big fanboy week, and I sort of didn't want to say, oh, I love your song, or I love like Daniel, but it's for me always been that one. There's a song called Tonight. I can't even remember what album it's on, and it's got like a 3-minute classical piano intro, and George Michael actually did an incredible version of it as well. And then I love Sacrifice, which is really nice because it's part of that new the Dua Lipa song that's out, the collab thing at the moment. But yeah, that would be my Home County song.
Tell me about the experience of being in the studio of Elton John, like, because not many people can ever kind of say that and talk about that. Like, I mean, I presume, you know, taking nothing away from your achievements, was there a bit of imposter syndrome? How the fucking hell is this happening right now? Moment about that. I mean,
especially when, like, on one of the days on the train up, I wrote loads of lyrics on my phone and gave them to him. And I was like, well, if Bernie can do it, maybe I can do lyrics. Like, suddenly realised they were awful. And, 100%. But, I mean, it's a weird one because that's more of like a... I felt like it was like a red letter day, like someone had bought me like an experience day to go in with someone. Like, it just made no sense because I'd literally spent all of my life worshiping him, especially because we'd grew up in the same town.
Yeah.
And that was like a big part of our relationship because he's obsessed with Pinner, the place that we grew up. And it's obviously such a strange place for him and so many different memories. Yeah. But we bonded on that a lot. And we wrote some cool stuff. It was with the band Clean Bandit. And they never ended up putting any of it on the album, but I thought there was some cool stuff in there. But there was a moment where we were sitting in the studio and I was sitting next to him at the piano, and he played like a medley of all the hits.
Shut up.
Just literally me and him in the room.
Wow.
For like 10 minutes, and I'm sitting on the piano stool with him whilst he's doing this, and it was just like it's always when you reminisce about it that you get chills, but that was like a truly, like, I can't believe what's happening.
That's incredible, mate.
Yeah, it was a good moment. It was a good day.
Right, okay, final track, Sam. This is where you play Tastemaker, a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
So I chose BTSTU Edit, because there are two versions of it, by Jay Paul, or Jai Paul. And this, it's been around for a while, and loads of people do know it, but they might not know that they know it. And lots of people won't know it because it's a very tastemakery song. But he is the is just such a fascinating artist to me, and it's so rare. He's the world's most reluctant artist. He's actually like a ghost. No, I don't know anyone who's ever seen him. I saw him once because I had a studio at Rack Studio, and my next door neighbor was Disclosure and Jimmy Napes. And he did a session with them for their Carica album, and the song never made the album. But I remember standing on the banisters, like looking down just to see Jay Paul, who was just this, like, no one sees him. And I did see him, and it was like this, the most unassuming guy in the world. But it's rare. It's so rare to find a reluctant artist and someone who doesn't give a shit about being famous or being recognized or anything. They just make music. And he, this song, I was in New York when I heard it first. It's probably 10 years ago. Don't even know when it came out. And it was literally like nothing I'd ever heard before. It still kind of is every time I listen to it. It doesn't sound like anything you would have ever heard. And I think maybe that's part of, that explains part of the character of someone who just doesn't think in the same way we think. And it was literally like, it's not even mixed. The song's like distorted and weird and rambling, and it's unreal. You have like, it's the closest thing to like art in terms of music that I think you would have heard in recent times.
Well, people can get to hear it because we put a Spotify playlist together, Sam, to accompany the podcast, where we'll put all the tracks that we've had a natter about today on there. Sam, we're recording this a couple of weeks into December, and I imagine this will come out probably just the other side of Christmas. And so we've, you know, 2022 just around the corner. What are you looking forward to from next year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
I'm looking forward to like getting back into the real world, because that hasn't been happening for a while. And
does that exist in LA?
Oddly. I mean, I think it is the same everywhere. I think everyone's just like, all right, I can't be bothered anymore. Let's just go to a party, or let's just go. Maybe whether that's sensible or not with the, that will remain to be seen. But I'm looking forward to sort of, we've missed the travel aspect of our jobs, and I'm looking forward to going back to Nashville and going to Miami and making music there. And I'm just at this really cool place now. I've like, you know, I've had my third kid, and we just moved into a new house and sort of building a new studio. And I'm just looking forward to just getting back to some form of normality. And like, I don't know. I'm not a very emotional person or a very, you know, but I think now, I suddenly realized that I'm at a really great place. And I'm very, as I said at the beginning, like it's mainly just because I got really, really lucky in life and got a few breaks.
Yeah.
But I've got a great family, and I live really nicely and get to do my hobby for a job, which still makes sense to me. So.
Well, you make your own luck as well. So don't, you know, necessarily, you know, write it off, because you do make your own luck. And what about professionally, what's happening?
Professionally, I'm looking for, so we've, you know, my main focus has been my label, Chosen People, that I run with Mark, my partner. And I can't wait to like really go properly with our artists and Elena Castillo, who's our main artist, and I feel like she's going to have an amazing year and must to properly be able to exploit that. You know, live has been something that hasn't happened. Like live performances is such an integral part of an artist's development, and I can't wait to be able to just get her out on the road. And you know, there are some really cool people that I'm working with. I'm working with one band in particular in January who, sadly, I can't name, but they're like one of my favorite bands, and I've been desperate to work with them my whole career. So that's going to be fun.
And so obviously, you can't say anything now, but when it happens, I'm sure you'll be shouting from the rooftops about it. So to ensure that people don't miss out on that, where's the best place for people to follow you and keep up to speed with what you're up to?
So my Instagram is This Is Romans, and I'm awful with social media, which I'm sure won't come as a shock to most people. But I usually post like new releases of songs that I've written on that.
Well, what we'll do when this comes out, we'll tag you in it so people can go and explore your work further if they haven't done already. Sam, it's been delightful talking records with you, mate. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's nice talking to an Englishman again.
Oh, thanks, man. There you go. Didn't want that one to finish. Like we had another little natter afterwards. I think Sam was, he said before we press recorded, you know, he's obviously out in LA. He said it was just nice to hear a voice that was English and sounded from home. And, if you're looking forward to, or you're enjoying listening to this voice, this lispy old Essex twang, you really must be missing home. But he was, I don't need to tell you he was delightful because you just listened. He was such a nice guy. Fucking hell. Like sharing a piano stool while Elton just rattles off his greatest hits. Like who ever gets to experience something like that? What a moment, you know? There were so many names that Sam could have dropped in this about the people that he's worked with. And yeah, go and explore, you know, the work that he's done because it's prolific and it's incredible. And it's always nice when you meet these people and they're just double humble and just friendly and cool. I'm back next time. In the meantime, if you want to head over and check out everything else you need to know about the pod, you can do that off the beat and trackpodcast.com. Other than that, just stay beautiful and I'll see you next time. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.